Doñana Community College President Dr. Monica Torres joins us next on Voice of the Public.
You know what? Community colleges have a ton of opportunity right now in higher education in the U.S. You know, lots of people have left the workforce. Lots of people have left education, higher education, and they're looking, I think, for new opportunities and for opportunities that provide some value to their lives. And I think community colleges can productively step into that space.
Recently, Doñana Community College announced it would be doing its best to absorb nursing students who found themselves without a program when Vista College abruptly closed. Of course, nurses are in high demand, not only in our community, but all around the country and the world for that matter. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call with your questions for Dr. Monica Torres, president of Doñana Community College on Voice of the Public. We'll get started right after NPR News. Good afternoon. It's 1:06. Welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is KC Counts. So glad to have you along on this Friday, December 17th. And we are pleased to be joined by Doñana Community College President, Dr. Monica Torres. Welcome to KRWG.
Thank you, Casey. I'm happy to be here to talk about the work we're doing at DACC.
Well, I'm really excited about this show. It's one of those where from week to week, I might feel like I have plenty of ideas in my head to last an hour. And other weeks, I feel like I'm not so sure. And this is one of those weeks where I'm not so sure. But I'm so excited about it because I feel like there are so many opportunities for people in this moment. The Great Resignation. And while things might seem really scary and really bad for so many people, there are opportunities coming in the future, and I want to spend some time on that today. But before we get into that topic, I want to hear a little bit about you and your background and how you came to fill this role at Doñana Community College.
Great. Thank you, Casey. I was born in El Paso and raised in Las Cruces, so Southern New Mexico is my home. I have 2 degrees from New Mexico State in English, and then got into community college work and found that to be incredibly important. In fact, the entire times I've been employed by community colleges, I've never regretted 1 minute because I feel like the work we do is really important. After my master's, I worked in community colleges for 10 years. Then I went back for my PhD, worked in the English department at New Mexico State for 11 years as a professor and as a department head for 5 of those, and then got the opportunity to come back to DACC and was happy to do it.
Where'd you go to high school in El Paso?
Actually, I was only born in El Paso. I was there for about a week, and then came to Las Cruces and graduated from Las Cruces High.
I gotcha. 1 week and you were out of there, right?
Exactly.
Well, I was born and raised in El Paso and didn't make the commute to this day back and forth. So when were you named president at the college?
I was named president in 2019. Actually, that was the year I was formally named president. The year before that, I was the interim president while the system was conducting a search.
Well, it's
so
good.
This is my third year. Yeah,
it's good you had a little bit of lead time then, because I knew you were you were named president in 2019, and I thought, oh, just in time for COVID-19, right?
Exactly. I had a little bit of lead time, but it's a heck of a time to step into this position. But it's a heck of a time for all of us, no matter what positions we occupy, right?
And no matter whether you've been there 30 years as the president, because no one's ever seen anything like this before.
Exactly.
And I want to talk a little bit about what it meant for DACC and its students. It is 1:09, and you are welcome to join the program at any time. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. You might be listening at 90.7 or up in Silver City, 91.3. You might be streaming us at krwg.org. A great way to listen no matter where you are. And you might be watching along on Facebook. You can always leave a comment or question on Facebook as well. We're happy to have you join the program any way that's easiest for you. So once the pandemic began and things changed for everyone at DACC and everywhere else, what did that look like for you? And how would you say you navigated this pandemic at the college between then and now?
No, I think actually the pandemic has changed everything in higher ed. Just so much has changed as a result. I had the good fortune of working with a number of great colleagues. And so we had a pandemic crisis team. We have a COVID safety coordinator. We have a contact tracer. And so we've put together a team. And one of our vice presidents, the vice president for business and finance, kind of led all of that effort. And so really, we had a team of people at DACC. In addition to that, we had a foundation across the system, right, led by Vice Chancellor Ruth Johnston and all of the work done by folks at NMSU. And so between the two groups, there was provided some infrastructure for how to make decisions and how to what directions we would go and what procedures would change. But I would say that was the great part of it. But I think the second part of it is kind of an ability, a willingness, an inclination to adapt as things changed, because things were changing for a period of time every week, every month, and we were having to adapt. And so that idea of okay, let's be ready to pivot when we need to pivot. And we'd like to say that's over, Casey, but as we know it, it's not over, right? We have a plan going into the spring semester, but as we know, things are changing. And so we continue to kind of rely on the infrastructure we have, even as we know that we may need to pivot in one direction or another. One of the big changes, and there's lots of big changes. One of them certainly is the students who were impacted. You know, we were down in enrollment last fall, 15%. And that was kind of the first fall of the pandemic. This fall, we were down 8%. But when we disaggregated our data, we could see that the people largely impacted by the pandemic were largely impacted in higher ed. And that was first-generation students, students in low-income circumstances, and students with children or other dependents. And they were down 40%. And so we know that a primary group of the population we serve has been impacted. And so we're having to think, how do we reach that group? How do we support efforts in community to make sure those groups get the attention and the resources they need to recover? So that's one of the big changes that we're thinking, not just now, but also in the future and in our planning on. But we can talk about this at any point, but it's also changed the way we teach. It's changed the way we provide services. It's changed the way what our employment situation looks like and how our employees work. And so we're trying to adapt all of that in as thoughtful a way as possible to make sure that the instruction and services we provide meet the needs of the students and members of our community.
What opportunities would you say the pandemic provided for certain student groups? The college was integral in helping to provide vaccines to the community, and you can take it from there and explain other ways that this gave students an opportunity to engage with the community.
You know, we've done a lot. So one of the things that I'll talk in two directions. One is from an instructional perspective. We now know that we need to offer classes in person for those students who benefit and online for those students who benefit. We will be in a hybrid environment, you know, for the foreseeable future, right? Until there's some other big upheaval that changes the way we do business. And so those are opportunities that students have that sometimes they didn't have before, right? They might have to rush away from their lunch hour, right, to come take a class and then rush back to work. And so they're just some opportunities that students are going to have on campus as a result of the way we're changing what we do. In terms of the community, yep, we have a testing site on campus and have had one for a long time. We ran clinics a pod for vaccinations for about 6 months. And one of the things that was just amazing about that, again, we had a group of faculty and staff working with the Department of Health to make sure those got done. And we had over 200 volunteers from the DACC community participate in those vaccination pods. One of the other things that we've done for a period of time is we've had food bank distributions. And so we bring people onto our campus, but we also have lots of people on our campus who are providing support for those distributions. And clearly, those have become more important in the pandemic, unfortunately, have become more important to people. So those are the sorts of things that we're trying to do in our community.
It's one of the images that may have faded because so much has happened. And there are so many images that are burned into our minds. But one of those really shocking images is people people who lined up miles long to get food from distribution sites, and people saying, you know, I'm supposed to be donating to the food bank. You know,
right.
You know, not making a withdrawal from the food bank. And so it was something that was so important. And things have gotten now with the inflation we're seeing. Obviously, that's put a squeeze on food banks. Are you seeing effects of that particular problem?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, we're also seeing increased need. We have an emergency, like most institutions have kind of an emergency fund for things that happen unexpectedly to people that could impact their ability to continue in school. And sometimes it's something as simple as, you know, a flat tire, right? A tire that needs to get repaired. Or and sometimes it's something like their electricity is going to be shut off. And so we have seen increased need for those emergency services. And it's completely understandable, right? Because we're a little bit, you know, we're in some dicey times for folks.
For a lot of people. And, you know, everywhere we go, we see help wanted signs. But because of the decrease in enrollment, is that the case at Doñana Community College in terms of your staffing level?
Well, the way that we're seeing that is we're seeing fewer applications for the number of positions that we post. And I have seen probably in the last 3 or 4 months, I have seen a number of positions that we would normally be able to post through one cycle, one search cycle, maybe taking a second search cycle to fill with smaller numbers in the pool. So yeah, we're seeing that.
If you have a question for Dr. Monica Torres, the president of Doñana Community College, you can call 575-646-2212. This is Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. So glad to have you along. This is Casey Counts, our engineer, Mark Johnson, ready to take your calls and put you through to the program. And we're happy to have you join us any way that's convenient for you today. You can also do that on Facebook. You also mentioned earlier students with children, and obviously people with children, and this is going to get us into the topic of the Great Resignation, but before we can look to the great opportunities that exist and think of it in terms of people are just looking for something better for themselves, people with children are having a very tough time because of the child care crisis that exists as well. How does Doñana Community College try to aid its students with families?
There are in some of the general ways or things I've mentioned. For example, some of the people who approach us for emergency might need one-time childcare or try to get connected to childcare. But there are a couple things we're doing. We have one project in the south, southern part of the county, that we are going to scale to all of our campuses in the next 6 to 9 months. And that is how connecting students to resources in the community that they need. So, for example, one of the things that Alma Olasio is one of our coordinators down of this program in the southern part of the county. And one of the things she did was a child care expo. And she brought to one of our campuses people who provide child care, but she also brought the state agency that helps people get connected to assistance for childcare. And so part of what we're doing is really just trying to help people who are in need of childcare and looking for that sort of assistance, just connect them, be a connector, right? Be a handoff to the kind of resources that exist in the community. You know, clearly, and it's not simply an issue for our students, it's also an issue for our employees, right? We have lots of employees with children. And so the flexibility that we have seen in terms of working remotely, we worked almost not 100% because we have lots of employees whose positions require them to be on campus, like security and maintenance and so forth. But we work remotely. And so we're having to rethink how do we support families, and the ability to support people to work effectively remotely has been one of those places that we've stepped into as an employer in the community.
Is there a program for people who would like to get into the field of child care at the college?
You know, some of the programs that we have at the college are what we call transfer programs, right? And people who are familiar with community colleges and junior colleges know this, right? You do your first 2 years at the community college and then go to New Mexico State. So we have two programs. One of them is education, and it's really high school, junior high and high school, or mid school and high school level. But we also have an early childhood program where we provide training, certificate and associate degree for people who are looking to get into early childhood, and are looking to not, some students are going to look to transfer for a 4-year degree. Others, though, are looking to get right in the workforce. And yeah, we have a program to try and get folks into the early childhood workforce, because we need them. And it's a favorable time for early childhood, or becoming a favorable time for early childhood workers, given some of the support that's happening at the state level.
Right. Let's talk about nursing. Obviously, our community and those anywhere else are in desperate need of healthcare workers. No surprise why. When we have a lot of people, leaving their jobs, maybe for various reasons, but the weight and the burden that has been placed on our healthcare workers is unimaginable. And then to have a group of students at Vista College all of a sudden find out one day that they're no longer, students, nursing students. What is Doñana Community College doing to try to absorb those students? How many are there?
There are dozens of them. There are dozens. I believe the numbers that I heard is between 50 and 60 that we're working with right now. So one of the we are trying to work with them, and we're trying to work with them for two reasons. One is these students have a dream. They have a goal. They had something in mind, and they had taken active steps towards achieving that. And so from a perspective of trying to work with students who have a goal, who are motivated to get that, that's one of the reasons we're doing that. One of the other reasons we're stepping into that space is that the community needs nurses, right? They need ADNs, they need LPNs. And so from a community perspective, it was critical that we step in. So what's happening is there are some students who are a little bit further along in their path. And so some of those students are going to be able to step right onto the associate degree path in January. There are others who were still working up to being at the advanced level. And so those students we're working with, they're meeting with our admissions people, they're meeting with our financial aid people, and they're trying to work out all of those technical pieces of getting from one institution to another institution. And they're meeting with the nursing advisors to look at what prerequisites they have, where they are on the path, so we can get them in the right place. So a large number of those students, and I believe that we've already worked with between 30 and 40 of those students, will start working on prerequisites immediately in January and through the summer, ready to start the program in the fall. And so we are reaching out, and if in fact, just the other day, I was talking to a doctor who had one of those students who had not contacted us yet. And I called the doctor back and said, you need to get her to us, encourage her to come to us if this is a good time for her to pursue the degree, because, I can't say it any other way. They had a dream, and we want to help them meet that while meeting an economic development need and a human service need in our community.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for them as they step from one place to the next? Financially, do they expect to get their money back?
I don't know what they expect. That's a tricky business, because with lots of proprietary schools, tuition levels are different, right, between proprietary schools and state institutions. And I'm assuming that a number of them have made some investment already, some significant investment already in their education. And Casey, I can't tell you, I don't know any specifics about that, except that I know that's one of the big stops for them as on the path, is to work with our financial aid people to say, let's figure out what we can do. I'll be eager for January to get here for them, and for February to get here for them, because I think it's quite shocking. The two that I've spoken with, it was just shocking to be a nursing student one day and not the next day. And so once they get, I will be happy for them to be here at DACC, whether they're in the prerequisite part of the program or in the nursing program, because we have faculty that are deeply committed, and I think will welcome them and get them on kind of this new part of the path. So I think in part it was so shocking for them for such a change. But certainly the financial piece is one of the big ones.
There was an interview I was listening to not too long ago with someone who headed a nursing program at a college or university, who was talking about the difficulty that they were having as well, getting and maintaining staff. And we talked a little bit about, you know, what challenges you're having overall in the college. But one of those reasons was like people were going, you know, back into the field and going back into practice. And what are you seeing there at DACC in terms of your nursing staff, your teaching staff?
You know, the teaching staff for a few years now have been pretty stable, and they remain pretty stable. I'll tell you one of the other areas we teach in where we're seeing huge changes, and that is in respiratory therapy. You know, respiratory therapy is one of those majors that nobody really knows about. Now we do, right? Now we have a much stronger consciousness of it. And both nurses and respiratory therapists are really having opportunities, two different kind of opportunities. One, the opportunity to exit because they're fatigued, right? Mm-hmm. But they're also having lots of opportunities to move away and make a much more lucrative salaries. Our faculty are stable. They've been pretty stable for the last few years, and I'm not hearing a lot of change about going into the field, which I'm really grateful for. One of the things I'm hearing is actually respiratory graduates are leaving the area. Yeah. And have been, I mean, there lots of our graduates are employed in Las Cruces and El Paso, but a lot of them are exploring some of the other opportunities they have given what's happening across the country with COVID. So we're not seeing the impact on our faculty. We are seeing the impact a little bit on our faculty pools when we're hiring, but we are seeing the impact, and some of our recent graduates are moving.
I want to share a text with you that I received recently. So forgive me while I thumb through here. It's from my friend Stephanie, who lives in Indianapolis, and she's a nurse. She's a pediatric nurse. And she sent me a text saying, I'm moving in. And below that was the job offer that went out to, you know, maybe a pool of people that she signs up for, right, to see what opportunities are out there around the country. And it was for a pediatric nurse in El Paso for over $8,000 a month. And right. I said, I have a room ready. It's only $5,000 a month. Come on down.
Such a generous landlord, Casey.
And friend. But yeah, those opportunities are there. And we want to see them here for our graduates and for our family. You know, you want your kids to stay close by. Absolutely. And your grandkids.
You know, I am aware of some of the legislature. I think we'll see some activity in the legislature around how do we recruit, how do we educate more nurses, how do we keep them in. I think we'll see some activity in terms of how do we incentivize, because clearly this is an issue, you're right, across the country and around the world, but certainly in New Mexico, and how do we keep them here.
And these things are cyclical. I mean, you know, a pandemic, and we hope not to see another one anytime real soon, but we certainly could. But that will change the landscape of everything, and so we have a flood of people going into the profession, and then that goes away. Is there any reason to be worried about creating a flood of healthcare professionals? It doesn't seem like anyone's really talking about that in terms of being a reality that we'll have the field flooded in a couple of years.
I do not. I've not heard that at all. I'm hearing absolutely no concern that we'll flood the field. In fact, I think we're really just trying to. I actually think pre-pandemic we had shortages.
Yeah.
But I'm not hearing that whatsoever. And the health field is you know, well, it's been a growing field for a number of years, and we don't see it stopping. We obviously COVID's impacting it, but I'm not hearing any concern about that, at least at my level.
You're right, and I think the conversation at the time was that we had this big generation of baby boomers that were, you know, aging along the same path, and so we were thinking in terms of
how. I didn't mention that one of the things we did just about, I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, is we did start a third cohort of nursing students because we wanted to get, we need to produce more nursing students. So just a couple of years ago, we moved our faculty to 12-month contracts and opened a third cohort. So we actually take three groups of students each year.
All right. It is coming up to 1:30, 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Monica Torres, the president of Doñana Community College, who is spending the hour with us today to talk about what the college is doing to help absorb those nursing students from Vista College, and also what opportunities exist for community colleges in the wake of the Great Recession. And you thought that there were a lot of opportunities for community colleges. So let's talk about some of the ideas you have along those lines.
I think I was alluding to some of them a little while ago, but I'll revisit them and maybe expand on them a little bit. I actually think that this is really giving us a new opportunity, new opportunities to think about how we teach and how we reach out to folks. And I think this is one of the advantages. I think community colleges, I think, are pretty good at this. So for example, I think the people who have left employment and who have left the college and the world is, or are dealing with a variety of circumstances like children at home, they're looking for flexibility in their education. I think a lot of times we thought, oh, let's get a degree. And we have degrees. We're happy for people who want to pursue degrees. But one of the things I like about the work we do is that there's lots of on-ramps and off-ramps. So let's say somebody says, you know what, I want to learn a new skill and I have a short period of time to do that. Then there are ways they can get into a certificate program that may be a short-term program that gets them the technical skill they need. Or let's say somebody's working in a field and there is something that's just emerged in that industry that they need to know. They might find a class with us where there's an industry recognized credential tied to that, where they learn that skill. So on-ramps and off-ramps really offer flexibility for people who might be looking for something. But there's something else that I think is an opportunity, and that is we really are having to look at new ways to provide services and instruction. And that's exciting, right? I mean, I was a face-to-face faculty member. I did not teach online when I was teaching, and it's been a few years since I taught. Now, to go back, I have to develop those skills. I have to provide a more robust environment to our student population. So whatever the face-to-face environment is has to be robust, as it should be, as it has always had to be. But now I need to provide those online. There's so many online resources that can add to students. And faculty at a community college who are their primary mission is teaching, right? They're thinking about those and the environment, and we want to make sure we can support them as an institution. You know, we have a brand new kind of training professional development program to support faculty to learn those new skills and to develop further skills. And so I'm excited about that. So it's just giving us opportunities to really recognize that the world has changed a little bit here and how can we respond. And I find that our faculty and staff are interested in responding because they can see the need that the students have and want to provide for that.
I think before the pandemic, too, we were talking a lot about community colleges in terms of the need for plumbers and electricians, and we needed skilled, right, skilled workers. What are some of the programs that you're really excited about in terms of, seeing some robust growth in? And it may reflect what the local employer needs are as well, or where those holes are in this community.
You know, this is one of the other things that I can help, that I think we can step into in terms of the Great Resignation. I think that there's lots of people who left work for a variety of reasons, but one of them is to look for something more meaningful, perhaps. And when you say that, occasionally I do this exercise on my way to work. I'm driving up maybe I-70, or I'm coming up Loman to get to the East Mesa campus. And I try to identify any building or space not impacted by the kind of people we train. Mm-hmm. And you can't do it, right? I know there are billing and coding people in those buildings. I know there are nurses. I know there's dental hygienists. I know there's construction people who worked on, the road, who worked on that building. And so one of the things I think is that's exciting about community college education is that you can see the impact on the community, right? And one of the things that's so interesting, and as I was thinking about our programs, is that there's lots of programs we know about, right? So we know about lawyers, we know about doctors, we know about nurses, and we know about teachers because we see those representations, right? There are lots of programs we don't see representations for. And we call them discovery programs because you have to get to the college to actually discover that such a program exists. And I think we're going to actually see more of those. So for example, environmental, and we train largely the group of employees we train in the areas I'm going to talk about are technicians, right? Technician level kind of jobs. And so we train people in environment and energy technology, water technology. Most of the water utility operators across the state of New Mexico have been trained by DACC faculty members. You think about web design, we do that, film crew training. You know, when we think, Southern New Mexico has a very established network of promotoras or community health workers. We offer a certificate in community health work and we also offer an associate degree in public health. Things like respiratory therapy or health information technology, billers and coders. I mean, these are things, I mean, kids don't grow up saying, I want to be a biller, you know, a coder, right? Or I want to be someone who designs X or Y. And so these are some of the things that if we can get them here to look at them, it opens the door for them. I can tell you that one of the areas where we have capacity but don't always have recruits and that we're looking for is in electronics and manufacturing. There are jobs east of us at the missile range. There are jobs south of us in the industrial park. And so one of the things is we're working with particularly in the industrial park, working with those industries to try and figure out how do we recruit people? How do we help people imagine those jobs that they don't see regularly in popular culture? Right?
I wonder if there's a way to, I mean, you know, people would be interested to say, okay, let's look at some numbers. What is the best bang for my buck in education dollars in terms of what I'm going to get back out of that? Right, in terms of salary, job satisfaction, how engaged is the college in terms of helping to show students what those options are?
Absolutely. You know, there are one of the things that we try to get people to do pretty quickly, like even before they get to us, is on our website we have a career exploration tool, and as a number of us have taken it who are employed, we actually found that it's pretty good at giving people the ballpark, right, of where they might be interested in. And that's kind of on the landing page for the college. That's one of the start. One of the things is that we try to do is all of our students will meet with an advisor, and advisors will help them to think about what are career options, what are choices. The advisors are familiar with a whole range of tools that'll say, okay, let's look like what this job might look like. Mm-hmm. Let's look what does it look like if you get a certificate or an associate degree, or is there an affiliated degree at the bachelor's level? And so they help them think about what are the range of careers available, and they will look at salary ranges. But one of the things we really want to make sure is that students or prospective students get hooked up with the faculty, right? Because the faculty will be able to tell them, you know, let me show you what this looks like. Let me show you what the options are here for you. And let me tell you what the salary ranges are. Those are the kind of the three tools. Get them into kind of a career exploration tool quickly. Get them in a ballpark. Talk with an advisor. Talk with faculty members to give them that information. And then one of the things that I was talking about is the program we have in the southern part of the state is also help the navigators get them that information as well. There are tools online. There are tools online. There are tools in our materials that really say, let's show you what this could look like. Mm. But it's critical so people can make a decision. There are also people who come back to us, Casey, who, for example, maybe they've been a welder for 20 years, and as they age and their body changes, they come back to us maybe for building inspection. And so that's one of the places where I think community colleges are great at is there's lots of fields that are related to welding, right? Some of them are really good for young bodies, and some of them are really good for experience. People have experience in the field. And want to change positions.
Yeah, I think of like firefighters too, for example, where, right, you know, eventually it gets a little bit hard on the body to do those things, and yet you've gained all of these skills along the way,
right,
and maybe just need a little bit of a push to take that wealth of knowledge and experience to the next level.
If I could say one of the collaborations we have with New Mexico State is New Mexico State developed a bachelor's of applied studies, and often you will have people like firefighters or welders, people in a whole range of industries, and they want to go into management a little bit later on in the career, and to move into management they need a bachelor's degree, and so the bachelor's of applied studies out of the College of Arts and Sciences in New Mexico State is a collaboration where students who have an associate of applied studies in a field like welding or HVAC or water utilities, water technology, can move to a bachelor's level that then aids them in getting a management position in the same industry.
What about training for green jobs of the future?
You know, we are one of the programs I mentioned that's kind of a discovery program is environmental and energy technologies, and that's really moving in that direction. One of the other things that I know we're developing programs that have to do with electric vehicles. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And not just electric vehicles. In fact, a local Toyota provided us with a hybrid vehicle so that students could train on hybrid vehicles. In addition to that, I know that we're starting to develop a program, not just on the vehicles, electric vehicles, for example, but on plug-in stations. Right.
Yeah.
Not just for vehicles, but also for households. So we're moving in that direction.
Got a lot of a long way to go before the infrastructure is there for sure. So a bright future, no doubt, for
absolutely
folks in that field. It is 1:41 and 575-646-2212, the number that you can call if you would like to speak with Dr. Monica Torres, the president of Doña Ana Community College, this afternoon on Voice of the Public. She'll be with us until 2 o'clock, and of course from 2 to 4 this afternoon. Leora Zeitlin has intermezzo by request. You know, we've covered a lot of territory in terms of different programs that are offered, but I want to get down to some nuts and bolts in terms of, here it is, December 17th. When does the spring semester start?
Spring semester starts January 12th. And one of the things that we want, the spring semester is starting about a week earlier than usual. And so one of the things that we will start as soon as we come back, January 4th, we've got a campaign to call people to say, we know you're thinking about coming back. You kind of had taken some of the initial steps because I think that people will be thinking that we start mid to late January. So January 12th is when we start. It's not too late to apply, not too late to see an advisor, not too late to register for classes. And we will have, we've been, I would say, 70% online this fall and 30% face-to-face classes. And most of our face-to-face classes were those that absolutely required, many of them, that absolutely required hands-on, mm-hmm, right, instruction. In the spring, we'll see. At least our plan is to have more face-to-face instruction for those students who really feel like that's critical for them. And then we have lots of online classes. We'll continue to have lots of online classes as well.
Yeah. So is that something that you will be implementing immediately in terms of if somebody, a student comes to you and says, you know, this is really what works well for me, do you think that, you know, that will be offered where it can be?
Absolutely. Yeah. We will make every effort to try and line them up with whatever kind of modality works for them. And we're monitoring enrollments. We're not monitoring enrollments closely. For example, like just this morning, I was talking to the vice president for academic affairs, and he had noticed that we didn't have any more online seats in anatomy and physiology, which is really, really important for all the health programs. And so they were going to put on additional sections. So we're monitoring both the in-person sections and the online sections to make sure that we can accommodate as many students as possible.
Yeah, we started off by talking about, you know, the dip in enrollments, and you reminded me as you talked about calling students and getting out and finding them where they are and making sure that they know that they're, you know, to get them to think about coming back and to get them to be back on time. But that funnels down to our public schools, our K through 12 public schools as well. Isn't that fascinating how, you know, those officials are looking for students and trying to find them to bring them back?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's a real opportunity. One of the things that we've seen in public education and public schools in Las Cruces that I think has been a phenomenal development is the community schools that now exist, kind of recognizing that some students, well, all students need access to resources and tools that will allow them to concentrate on school, right, on learning. And some students have that in their families or their neighborhoods, and some don't, right? And so I love that what they're doing in the community and schools. And we're trying to move into the same, is how do we help students connect, right?
For those who don't know a lot about community schools, tell us what that means.
Community schools, as I'm aware of them in Las Cruces, is they actually bring community resources to the schools so that it's not just school is where academics take place, but school is where you can actually get access to other resources. For example, like there's food bank distributions. I know that we have a dental hygiene program and we have a dental hygiene chair at one of the community schools so that students can get basic dental hygiene care from one of our providers. And so they have access to a variety of resources at the school, which is really, really critical, I think, for lots of folks who need those resources, those tools close by.
I mean, I have
across town
people in my life today that I can think of who didn't go to the dentist as a kid at all. Unless they mm-hmm. broke a tooth, you know, unless there's blood coming out.
Absolutely. And we know that actually dental health really has a huge impact on all health, right? It really impacts what happens to our bodies. And so it's critical. So our dental hygiene program, I just love, we probably have four or five sites across the community where they provide dental hygiene services. And this is what I think a community college can do and what I think the community schools do. For us, for example, these dental hygiene sites across the community, they function as a clinical site for our students, right? So our students are getting experience in a real setting while providing services that are needed in our community. And for me, that's, I think, one of the most exciting things. And what a community college should be doing is how do we advance kind of our mission and the activities of our mission while really serving communities in new and exciting ways.
And I can recall when I did a little bit of research to look for what those jobs were in terms of satisfaction regarding pay and overall happiness. Dental hygienists were very high on the list.
Right. Dental hygienists are well paid. And they can go a lot of places. Some of our dental hygiene, we have a lot of dental. You can hardly go to, frankly, a dentist's office now, not run into one of our dental hygienists or one of our dental assistants assisting graduates. But they also go, we do have graduates who go to Dallas, Albuquerque, Denver. We do see them leave the community from
and
time to time because they have opportunities.
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that your clients really can't be too rude to you while they're there with.
Right. Exactly. Right. They can't talk back too much.
All right. Let's get to the phone. Augie's on the line at 575-646-2212. Good afternoon, Augie. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you guys, you ladies are doing well as well. And my question is this. Well, first of all, I am not going to talk back. I don't want to get in trouble. And my question is this. Is DACC going to expand into more foreign languages? And if so, do you need any people that speak German that have masters in German study?
Thanks, Augie. Thanks for the question. Right now, I don't see us moving a ton into foreign languages and German. My apologies, Augie, if you're a German speaker, a German faculty member, potential. Part of what we do is we have a fairly limited second language program, and the areas and in some ways we're trying to make strategic decisions or decisions that allow us the biggest and kind of the biggest payoff. And so the primary language that we teach, in fact, I think the only second language we teach at DACC is Spanish, right? Because we see more of a need in terms of how people are using that for their careers. Kind of most of our students stay in the Southwest. Most of our students stay within a 200-mile radius of Las Cruces. And so that's really where we're focused is Spanish language. And so I'm not hearing any plans for us to move into other languages, including German.
Augie, thanks for the call. And it looks like we have Don on the line with just about 10 minutes to go. Don, welcome to Voice of the Public. Thanks for your call. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And I just wanted, Dr. Torres, I just want to tell you I've lived in Las Cruces for many, many years. And just want to tell you how proud I am of the Doña Ana Community College. And I really congratulate you on your vision and programming. It's just you play such an important role in our community. And my question is, it seems kind of unusual that the community college is part of New Mexico State, and I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the advantages of that kind of arrangement.
Great. Thanks, Don, and thank you for the compliment. I actually, as you know, I grew up here. I love DACC, and I've always loved DACC for the work that it can do in this community, and proud of the colleagues that I get to work with every day. There are distinct advantages to being part of the NMSU system. I think there are lots of people who would say there are advantages to being an independent community college. The reality is that if you're an independent community college, you do have less structure, right, to navigate, right? And sometimes that's an advantage. But I see nothing but advantages being part of NMSU, and I think the advantages are much greater. One, and the advantages are solely about what opportunities are available to students. And so there are times if a student goes to an independent community college and then wants to transfer, there are numbers of hurdles that they have to get through to make that leap, to change to that part of the pathway. That's not an issue as part of the NMSU system, right? We have relationships with academic departments. We have relationships with student services. It's an easy process for students to transfer from one place to another. And so that's one of the advantages, one of the big advantages. I think a second one, and I've been working for Chancellor Arvizu for a couple of years now, several years now. And one of the things that I absolutely love about what he's doing is that he does have a vision for how all of us in the system can contribute to a quality of life in the state of New Mexico. So that includes the community colleges, that includes the university, that includes the extension agents, that includes the research science centers. And so to be part of a system that potentially positively impacts the state of New Mexico, for me, is nothing but exciting, right? It not only is about making opportunities available for individuals, it's about improving the economies and communities and supporting healthy communities across the state. So those are two of the biggest advantages is being able to really is kind of this big vision, but also it structurally it just opportunities are there for students because we're part of a structure that helps them get from one place to another if that's what they want to do.
Thank you, Don, for the call. And you've just got a few minutes left if you have a question or comment for Dr. Monica Torres, the president of Doña Ana Community College, who is spending the hour with us today on Voice of the Public to talk about ways that the community college has adapted through the pandemic, ways that it has tried to absorb nursing students from Vista College who found themselves all of a sudden without a program, and ways that it can provide people with opportunities in the wake of the Great Recession, when you have maybe found yourself going through this pandemic. So many people, for so many different reasons, aren't going back to the same work that they were doing before. And I think that, you know, if you work in a service industry, for example, you know, we talked a little bit and had a funny moment about, you know, dental patients not necessarily being able to give you any smack. But people are encountering that all over the place in the service industry. And so do you think, Dr. Torres, that it's, our patience has just worn to that point where it's just too thin to kind of get out there and put up with that on top of everything else?
Yes, I think that's true. You know, I think we're not listening, and this is something that is of great concern, I think, to, probably to all of us, is that I think patience is worn thin. I think we've lost a little bit of civility. We've lost a little bit of our ability and our flexibility, facility to engage with a full range of people, right? People who maybe don't share our opinions. You add on top of that COVID, you add on top of that economic crisis, and people are fatigued, right? And so I think, you know, all of that is in some ways a perfect storm. And giving people, you know, giving people the opportunity or the perspective to maybe it's time to step out and try something else. And it does, I also think that, you know, the workforce is just changing rapidly, right? You know, the technology is changing the workforce rapidly, and there's just so many opportunities out there. So I think it's a perfect storm of a variety of things that have happened that people are saying, maybe I need to reconsider here.
It was certainly before the pandemic, and Andrew Yang, who ran for president, was talking about the potential of losing, I think his quote was, or his estimation was, 20 million jobs in the next 10 years just due to automation alone. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic really seemed to just accelerate that. In terms of, and now we go to the grocery store, of course, one of the things we encounter is we're more likely to be checking out, you know, our own groceries, now on the way out of the grocery store. And, you know, of course, that was something that was destined to happen, because when technology improves, companies will adapt that technology. It's always cheaper than a person, no matter how high minimum wage is. So in what ways, with the last few minutes here, is Doñana Community College and other community colleges employing methods to keep up with that change?
You know, we're doing a lot of work here. I think that one of the things that is really incredible about some of the academic programs at DACC is we have a computer technology program. We have a digital media program. We have a manufacturing electronics program, all of which are going to be incredibly critical. They're already critical mm-hmm. to that changing economy, that factor of the workforce that's changing. And so there are opportunities to be retrained, right, and to change directions. And so we have incredible programs, Casey, that we also have a certificate in cybersecurity. We're working with NMSU, the College of Ag, the College of Arts and Sciences, on this sorts of technological changes that are happening. So there's a ton of opportunity. And the other day I heard somebody say something really interesting, is that there's going to be a lot of loss of jobs to automation, but there's also going to be additional jobs added because of automation. Mm-hmm. And it would appear that employees are, as we've been talking about for the whole hour, employees are starting to make different decisions about what kinds of jobs they want, how long they want to work, what kinds of environments they want to be in. And maybe all those things come together in a way that we think of as positive. We always talk about automation in terms of the workforce as a potential threat. Maybe it create some spaces that are really not a threat at all, but are opportunities in some significant ways.
And it's different for everyone, but there might be, let's just make an arbitrary line, over 40, a little more scary. Under 40, probably a lot more exciting to you in terms of a change in career path.
Right. You know, one of the things I'll say that I think I want to mention, because I think this haunts people, and that is mathematics. One of the things that I think community colleges are really good at, people are intimidated often by math. Ooh. Some of these new fields require some math.
I shudder.
But I wouldn't hesitate for one second to send anybody to the faculty who teach in our math department to have conversations and work through and really have a shot at becoming successful at developing the math skills needed kind of in some of these areas we're talking about.
I think it's easy to get scared of math. I did when I was a freshman in high school. I got scared of algebra. And then geometry the following year. And so I thought I was scared of math. Geometry the following year just came so naturally to me. And I've always just found that so interesting. And many, many people have that same experience where it's one or the other just works well for them. And once you put in the work and figure it out, I think it's definitely not so scary anymore.
Oh, and yeah, absolutely. And we have people willing to do the work with folks. Right? Just absolutely willing to do the work. And so I really encourage people to check that out. Check that out with us.
You know, you mentioned job retraining in terms of, I'm so glad you brought up cybersecurity because it's such an important issue right now. And the government is really scrambling to try to find ways to protect our most critical infrastructure. So something that is going to be the topic of our Intelligence Squared U.S. show on Saturday evening at 5 p.m. Another area where I wonder if you think we'll see a lot of retraining are folks that currently work in fossil fuels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think actually, and we have not done a lot in fossil fuels, but those community colleges that are actually absolutely thinking about how do we get people into sustainable energy areas? How do we get them trained, or how do we get them trained in other areas they might have been interested in? Mm-hmm. One thing I forgot to say, Casey, we've been talking about students coming to the college and studying. We also have units that go into the community and train for employers. And that's a different kind of services that we provide to the community that are still about training the workforce.
Really,
my apologies for bringing it up so late.
Oh, that's no problem. Cause yeah, we only have a few seconds left, but it's definitely tailoring, the workforce to the needs that are out there. So, lots to talk about, and we hope you'll come back in the future and talk again with us on another edition of Voice of the Public. Dr. Monica Torres, president of Doñana Community College. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Casey. I appreciate it.
And Leora Zeitlin right after NPR News.